Illusion of Difference, I as Creator, with your host, Yolanda Slake. Our search for unity starts within. Our quest for safety starts within. Once we understand the role difference plays when building community, we can release what we are holding back. We can learn from life's challenges. We can become who we are meant to be.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Illusion of Difference. I'm Yolanda Slake, and I am your host. We're going to be talking about race, gender, sex, humanity. Throw a little spice in there. That'll be a little bit of a surprise, but not really. And I have my guest, Johnny Lake. You're going to be surrounded by lakes, right? You should be so lucky. Johnny, I'm going to bring you in and welcome you to the show. Glad to have you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yes. Well, here's the thing I want to do. I want to talk about the difference between, and that's where I think a lot of us get lost, in the difference between, for instance, race and humanity. What's the difference between gender and sex?
Yes.
A lot of us get lost in that, and you're really clear on that, and I think I am too, and I think we can help some people out if we just have a chat for about 30 minutes.
Yes. It's a very important conversation in this time when we are negotiating identities on a daily basis, in fact. Mm. And where before, historically, people had no choices about their assignments of identity, people are claiming more autonomy and more power, more privilege in claiming their identities in the context oftentimes of the still binary separation between identities.
Mm-hmm.
Race, for instance, is one of those categories that have traditionally been used to separate and divide and also to hierarchize the meaning of people's identities, so that being black was always considered less than being white. Being white always is considered a privileged category, you know, within some of our family members who, appearance-wise, look like white people and they enjoy the benefits of whiteness. But if you ask them if they're white, they will say, no, I'm not white.
Mm-hmm.
And going all the way back in slavery to the one drop rule, it was really instituted to protect whiteness from intrusions of people who might not actually appear to be white. So nose, hair texture, all of the different things that seem to be associated with race was used to separate even within families, as in my family. I have family members, seven of us. Some going as light as white people, some as dark as me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we think about race as a category, we have to make the distinction between biological genetic race and what I call socially constructed racial categories.
Yeah.
One is biological and genetic, which means we are all in the same race. It's mapped a human genome all around the planet, and they've discovered that we are effectively the same genetically. Biologically, we are one race. But when we look at the categories of races that are used, even in our census, as formal as that is, the census uses categories of white, black, Latino, Native American, Asian, and these are therefore perceived as biological or genetic races, and they are not. They are socially constructed racial categories, and this leads to the confusion when we're talking about these issues. Because that collapse of socially constructed racial categories into biological race is really one of the very flawed understandings of race that many people have.
Yes, and while you were talking, I know you've probably heard this as well. But actually, I was grown by it before I heard someone use this blow hair and blue veins and blow hair. And yeah. I don't know if you've heard that or not, but if you have, yes. You know that was in the communities yeah. that were most held back by the concept of race, which is like, if you think about yeah. it, it's a bit of a joke, but it's yeah. not. It's not a joke,
yeah.
but it no. is.
It's access to privilege and access to opportunity and access to privilege.
Exactly, and all the other trappings that come along with running things, and that's why I think there are people who are hell bent on keeping things the way they are, and that is getting in the way of us being able to look and see beyond race, and
well,
we
yeah.
tend to lump everything into those two, race and
yeah.
humanity. We don't even use humanity that much. From
no.
what I've read and see recently, this is
yeah.
recent stuff. You don't see people talking about humanity.
There's a value to the racial categorization. Michel Foucault talks about how society organizes itself, and he doesn't use race as the only lens. He talks about mm-hmm. other socialization processes that we go through that creates the hierarchy. And so there's value in the racial hierarchy, and the value accrues mostly to people who are privileged to
mm-hmm.
be considered at the top of that hierarchy. I did it just yesterday with a group. I asked them, give me five racial categories that you're familiar with, and most people pick the federal five, black, white,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Native American, Asian. I says, now create a hierarchy where you put the first group that has the most privilege related to their racial identity as number one. And then I asked the group, how many people have white for number one? Every single person in the room had white for
of
number
course.
One. I says, now, did you talk about this activity before we did it? No. Mm-hmm. And they say consensus is hard to get, especially in a large group of people, but we got consensus and you didn't even have to talk to each other. So it means that we know that race still matters and that there's value in the racial hierarchy, which means that to let it go means that someone has to let go of the value of racism.
Exactly.
Someone has to let go of the advantages that accrue to them because of racism. And that centers white conversation as being participants in this effort to address race and racism, as it has been used to divide our communities and to divide humanity.
Yeah.
So I think when you allude to humanity, you allude to the fact that we are all the same race, biologically and genetically. And so what one group of people based on skin color deserve, and we call it white privilege often, is also what other groups of people also deserve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm going to jump in with a book, and it
okay.
is Passing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the movie, and I was like, that's amazing. These two women, without giving away a whole lot, actually created their own worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You could see that very clearly.
Yes.
Yes. And it spoke to how this whole race thing is still being kept going, because we created, all of us, we all created, just like you gave that example just now where people, they created white privilege right in the middle of a workshop question.
Yes.
You know? So.
Yes. And that indicates the socially constructed nature of race. No
mm-hmm.
one's born knowing about race. No one's born knowing anything about the hierarchy. And
mm-hmm.
so where does it come from? Where do we learn it? How do we learn it so well that we all know it without even having to have a conversation about it?
Exactly, exactly. It's all around us and everyone. Even when you have groups of people who cannot identify as white per se.
Yeah.
There's still a hierarchy based on looks and based on...
Absolutely. In the Latino community, the Latinos who identify by census as white compared to the Latinos who identify by census as black, and they, the ones who are white, actually enjoy greater benefits in American society, higher educational attainment, higher home ownership, higher insurance ownership. So many ways the advantages of whiteness accrue to people within the Latino community, and there's technically no white people there. And so when we look at these categories, you know this from our culture, that the, if you light, you're all right. If you brown, stick around. If black, get back. So that light skin has always indicated some kind of advantage or benefit or privilege that was really socially constructed.
Yes. And we still, you know, it's amazing that we never talked about these little sayings, like just the one you just used, but there they are. We both of us recognize it from way back. I can almost remember the first time I heard the one you just used, where if you're brown, stick around, if you're white, you know, if you're black, step back.
Yeah.
You know, it's
real.
You can't.
I mean,
but it is.
If we were making this stuff up, it might be facetious, but you don't have to make it up. You can look at our history and know. Marcus Garvey went to the NAACP meeting back at the turn of the century, 20th century. And he left, and his comment was, I think I was the only black person in the meeting, because if you remember Du Bois's argument about the Tyler is 10th, the Tyler is 10th were, and most of the black people who were included in any official positions back then were light-skinned,
and
goes back to slavery.
Blow hair.
And this goes back to slavery, when the children of the slave master were afforded certain opportunities, like partial education. Maybe they opened them a shoe store in town where they could do shoes or something, or send them up north where they got education. So many of the light-skinned black people were afforded some of the privilege that was often afforded only to white people.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That is very true.
Yeah.
My grandfather, he was born a slave from the slave master, as far as we can tell, because it was toward the end of slavery when he was given his freedom by the slave master and a stake to go up his own life. And that's another thing that I want to talk about, but I just want to touch on it because I want to do another show on this. Because I think there's a place for what we call white people to do something different as well. And they have ancestors, too. And I'm mentioning this ancestor because he literally got my grandfather got his money from his slave master and papers, freedom. And he got his half-brother, who was, you know, and they got on a wagon train for blacks and went to Georgia and set up stake that way. So there's a place for that. We can hold, I'm sure there are other families that have, and they don't have to be black families, they can be whatever, that have that same kind of resistance to the status quo back in slavery time. So that's for another show, I think. But did you have any?
This conversation about race will not work if white people are not included.
Exactly.
I think the whole history of people of color attempting to do this work alone tells you how effective it is if white people are not involved in these conversations. And they do have the same stake in this conversation as people of color.
Yes.
Because this is. And when you allude to humanity, it is the nature of humanity that we are struggling for, and that includes everybody. And so to practice any kind of exclusion, and sometimes I notice non-dominant communities will do the same thing. If you're not Latino, then they don't want to include you. If you're not Native American, they don't want to include you. And I always tell the non-dominant cultures and communities that if you use that strategy, you're doing the same thing with race that most white people have done historically, is use it as a means of exclusion, not of inclusion.
Yeah.
So we don't want to do that to each other either. Native Americans adopted white people into their tribes. Native Americans adopted black people into their tribes. Mm-hmm. They didn't define their family strictly along the lines of skin color. And if you look at Latino communities, what color is a Latino? If you look at their communities, they're all colors.
Yeah.
What color is an African American? So the mm-hmm. effort to define your family strictly along the lines of skin color is something that has been used historically to exclude people, but in certain cultures, it has not been the measure of who belongs in your family or not based on their skin color.
Yeah, I got a little quick story I can share with this Latina. I think he was Puerto Rican. It was in New York. I jumped in a taxi because, you know, you don't drive in New York, right? Well, you do, but, you know, it's more fun to ride. So I hopped in a taxi and I was talking, and he was all chat. That's not a problem. I was talking, and he said, I'll say Cuba, just because I don't remember where. I just knew he was Hispanic. And he said, where are you from? And I said, I grew up in Detroit. I live here in New York, but I grew up in Detroit. He said, no, where are you from? And I said, I'm from Detroit. That's where I was born. And he said, no, where your people from? I said, and then
there
it hit
go.
Me. He was trying to find, he was trying to make a place where he could connect with me beyond the United States. And there was, I wasn't getting, because I was being dense, I guess, and had other things on my mind. And I said, my family is from the South. And he looked in the rearview mirror. I'll never forget. He looked in the rearview mirror and he said, you're mixed. Just like that. I'm like, wow.
Yep.
So there, it was there. It was right there. It smacked me in the face. And he didn't say another thing to me. Not even goodbye when I got out of the taxi. It was like I was, you know, not there.
Yep.
So it's a very complex thing. And we need all our ancestors. We need all our people. We need everybody to be pretty much on the same page, and that is racism doesn't belong in this century. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-mm.
So
no,
yeah,
and I stress that with communities of color is that if we're going to address these issues, we got to address them collectively, not independently, not. You know, the history of our separations is Latinos over there, Native Americans over there, black people over there, and that separation dilutes our strength and opportunity to address these issues as humanity, as you mentioned earlier. And so in order to do this work, we have to include everybody.
Exactly.
Anytime whenever people talk about affinity groups, I always wonder, is that how you live your life, in affinity groups?
Some do.
Kids in affinity groups. Kids don't live their lives in affinity groups.
No.
We don't either. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going to actually create communities that work, we have to create communities that work together, not separately.
Exactly. And also the other thing that makes it easy if when we start continue to separate ourselves is the fact that we can one group or another can very easily be identified as the problem. Well, all these black people over here in this neighborhood, that's why there's trash. They don't, the fact that people aren't having their trash collected, right, is invisible.
Yep.
And it makes it very easy to make
blame.
People, the problem.
To label and blame and stereotype entire communities. That's what happens on a regular basis.
Yeah. So let's move to another little thing is my pet peeve, and that's sex and gender.
Mm-hmm. That's a really important one to consider as well, because and many times this has come up in confusion because gender is, nobody's born with gender. Nobody knows anything about gender when they're born.
Exactly.
Nobody.
Yeah.
And so where does it come from? I often ask people, where does this knowledge come from then? The society around you. which teaches you what the beliefs about gender are, which varies from culture and society to society. So that in some cultures, the binary male-female is strong. So it's really difficult for anybody who don't identify that way. In other cultures, there's always been recognition of multiple gender identities. But gender and sex are not the same thing.
No.
So you're born with hormones.
Apparatus.
You're born with genetic.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're born with genitalia, all those things. You're born with all those things. And there's a certain ability, say, to produce a child or not produce a child from your own body. I mean, I use that sometimes to help people understand how amazing women are who can actually produce another living person from their own body. But to collapse gender and sex is where some of the dilemma comes in, because it's really difficult to collapse those two into the same construct. They're not the same construct.
No, but they're pretty confused. There's been
well, it's confused. It's confusing if we, but I think there's a certain similarity between the way the socially constructed racial categories have been attempted to be collapsed into physical, biological race.
Yeah,
that's the only
yeah.
thing that makes white people or black people or anybody else think that we're different from each other, is that we've taken for granted that these socially constructed racial categories are actually biological, and they're not.
Mm. No.
And
yeah.
so the same with, I think, trying to collapse gender and sex into the same construct doesn't quite work, because they're not the same construct. And so what a person presents as gender, say a woman, a person born and assigned at birth as a woman, chooses to identify with what's considered male characteristics. So maybe she goes into a male career, maybe she wears male clothes, things like that. All of those, that gender presentation may indicate maleness, but the birth status, if she goes to the doctor, she has to tell the doctor she was born with a female body in order for the doctor to be able to help. Understanding the similarities is important, but also understanding the incredible differences between socially constructed race and biological race and socially constructed gender and biological sex.
And stop putting so much emphasis on what you wear and what how you dress or who you are attracted to. There's that's where a lot of the confusion, I think, came. Because
yeah.
when I first started this work, which was back in the early 90s, I had to keep reminding myself that gender and sex were different. Because I even
yeah.
found myself slipping into talking about gender when I was actually describing sex.
Yes, yes.
And
that's not
that
unusual.
Has gotten, I think, worse over the years, because I dropped out and now I'm back. And I'm seeing the same kind of arguments going, but they're a lot more heated and
yeah.
Confused.
Right. And if you think of this as some type of contest, if we enter this as some type of contest, then people have to contend with each other. And if people cannot see it as a contest, but see it as a representation of our complex identities and complex humanities, then we're not in competition with each other. But I think if you know passing, when you mentioned passing, how long have people of color been passing?
Since,
you've been passing forever, and nobody ever thought too much about
yeah,
it, because
yeah.
we were trying to accrue privilege related to passing as white. And nowadays, there are white people who are trying to pass as people of color, and it really doesn't make any sense to anybody, especially white people. Why would a white person give up the status of whiteness in order to be a person of color? And so it's led to this confusion, as you've seen the media a lot talking about people who are identified as white trying to identify as a person of color. And again, if We recognize that these are socially constructed categories and not biological or genetic categories. It leads to even more confusion because what makes a person white? What makes a person black? It's socially permitted.
And why isn't it okay for them to go from one line to the other? You know, I'm going to step in the white line today, or I'm going to step in the black line today.
This is socially produced. We've been doing that for generations. My uncle used to go ride the buses with the white people down south during segregated days, and nobody ever said anything to them. Now, they didn't identify as white people, but they were able to pass to accrue the privileges related to being white. But my one uncle, he said, I hate this skin color. He said, because it reminds me that some slave owner forced one of my grandmothers to have sex, and that's where I come from. He said, that's why I hate this skin color.
Yeah, that we haven't touched on that. Shame that comes with being...
A lot of shame and a lot of trauma in this culture still from slavery, which, you know, is only a few generations away from us.
I know.
I can go two people back to a slave who was bought and sold like a cow, a horse, or a pig. Two men, my father and my grandfather, and I knew both of them in my lifetime.
And I can go.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I can go great grandmother. So I don't know how many people that is.
Yeah.
My grandfather and then my great grandmother came over on a slave ship. So we're still close. Very close.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, and so the consequences of that, you can't just erase them and say, okay, slavery so long ago, y'all don't need to talk about it.
Yeah, every time somebody says that.
You have to talk about it.
You have to because of the loss, if nothing else. I literally don't know what my great-grandmother's name was. I don't know what she actually looked like. All of that is not there. Because of slavery and because she came over.
Exactly.
I don't even know what part of the African continent she came from. If from there, I don't know. It could have been someplace like Jamaica or someplace, you know? Who knows?
And I have no idea. Yep. And they didn't want you to know. Back in the day, they didn't want the black people to know who they were related to.
Or they didn't care. Black woman, black girl, 18, 19, or whatever. That's all.
Well, to give you something current, my grandson in school at one of the best schools in Oregon said they were talking about race, and he says, Papa, he says, all the white people had names, but he says none of the black people even had names. He said they just call them black girl or Negro woman or Negro man, and he says, I don't think anybody else noticed that. But even to this day, we still see that diminishing of the identity of people of color with something as subtle as that, but the only black child in class picks it up.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you know, and the other thing, if they did get identified with a name, it was something degrading, like, oh, we'll just call it Pickaninny, or, you know, look at her hair, it's like a little knots. Let's call it Naughty, you know, that kind of thing, you know.
Or auntie.
And getting the kids, white kids getting slaves around their age for presents.
Yeah.
Like a doll.
Yeah.
That's another thing that happens. Yeah. We don't talk about. And that's part of part of this country's history.
Yep. Thomas Jefferson's wife came with her half sister, who was the child of the slave owner. And so they were sisters, but she was owned by her sister.
Mm-hmm. There's so much we can talk about besides fighting each other. There's so much I see that we can bring people together under. And I've said this before to you, that I think we're in touch with each other for a reason, because
this work
needs to be done. And it looks like we can do it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Considering how likely it was that you and I would have ever met.
I know, right?
It's not an accident. It's not an accident. It can't be.
No. Oregon was the last place I wanted to come. I wasn't even like, oh, you know, I want to go to Oregon and see what the mountains look like over there. I ended up with family obligations and things. So, and that brought me here, and now I'm here. And I really believe that, you know, we're together in work for a reason.
No question.
So here's the thing that I'm thinking, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it. Just, I'm not going into a whole lot of detail because we just have maybe about 10 minutes left.
Okay.
So this is kind of like winding it up, so maybe setting up the next podcast. And that is, we just really touched on some of the downsides, for lack of a better word, the trauma or the loss that comes with. And I also look on the other side of whites, where I can't imagine that everybody wasn't, there weren't people who were traumatized watching the torture and all of that lynching and things like that. They're not every, I might be naive, but I really don't believe that everybody was like, hey, yeah, let's go do it. I just don't. So that isn't addressed either.
The trauma of two histories that America has not yet dealt with. Whenever Americans say we are a nation of immigrants, they erase two of the most important histories that this society has not dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Native American people didn't immigrate from anywhere.
Nope.
They didn't immigrate from anywhere. They were here. And African Americans didn't immigrate. One scholar says we were forced immigrants, but I disagreed with him. We were not forced immigrants, unless you consider the cows, the horses, or the pigs forced immigrants, because they never thought a cow, horse, or pig was going to have a family and become a citizen and become a member of this society, and they didn't think that of Africans either.
Mm-mm.
When they were bought and sold that way, they didn't anticipate they were going to get land and become citizens and get the right to vote. And you see, even to this day, we have this incredible struggle having this society recognize the right of African-American people to vote without restrictions or all the kind of laws they're passing. They still don't see African-Americans as full citizens deserving of the same equal rights as white people.
Exactly.
And that's grounded directly in slavery, the dehumanization of slavery of African-Americans.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And until we account for that, I think we're going to continue to struggle with racism as a society, not just for people of color, but for the white people of this society, too. I think George Floyd really struck the conscience of many white Americans who had not thought deeply about what was going on with racism until they watched the man die with somebody's knee on his for 8.5 minutes.
That was hard.
A lot of my white friends had as much trauma and upset with that as my friends of color.
Yeah,
but
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I told them, go ask the oldest black person you know how long have policemen been killing black men.
Yeah.
Go ask them how long has they suffered with racism in their jobs or in their neighborhood or in their communities or in housing. How many times have they been followed in the stores? How many times have they been pulled over by the police with no reason? I said, what you'll find from the oldest black people is that none of this is new. None of it.
And the other one is, how many times have you heard or known or experienced black women being raped just because they were there? They go into their houses. That's why so many black women know how to shoot guns, because they had to.
And no consequence for that kind of violation either. Just
no, none.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So
no, you are diving into some deep subjects, cousin. But very important subjects, and creating a space for it is really important. Otherwise, we don't have these conversations. So I appreciate you creating a space for it.
Well, I appreciate you being here. I do, and thanks for your input. And we're going to start to wrap things up. Yeah. You have any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with people before? Before we start,
I think it's brilliant when you make this conversation about humanity and not about individual groups or races or people. In that sense that we all share this common humanity, we share this planet. I think the global warming is a great example that it won't matter what color you are if we don't fix some of these issues that this planet is facing as humanity. So COVID, I think, emphasized the connection we have to each other. We might not want to be connected, but this COVID has proven that we are connected.
Mm.
And so you can deny it all you want to, but if we don't make it possible for this to be solved around the world, and this includes the poor nations and the nations that don't have money, if we can't do that, then we're going to continue to suffer with these pandemics, because this is not the last one, I guarantee you. And so it forces us to have to recognize our shared humanity and come together. And I don't think we're doing that great a job of that right now.
Not right now.
Not right now. But anybody who comes to this conversation needs to come with the best intention to improve things, not just for themselves, but for other human beings.
That's the key. It's not about how much money you make or how much money you can make or even how many big crowds you can bring to see, you know, or hear. That's not what this is about. This is what I see it as, down in the trenches, bringing up the stuff nobody wants to see and saying, you need to look at this. You need to look at it. And you need to understand how it affects you, how it affects this world. And that's like I said, in the trenches work. And
certainly is.
Well, my Johnny, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do this.
Yeah.
I like hearing that. We're going to do this again very soon. I'd like to, with your input, I'd like to make this an ongoing thing and help
build on,
bring people along.
It's an important conversation. And again, thank you for creating the space. And hopefully it helps other people to enter this conversation as well.
I hope so. So you go start your day.
Yes.
And have a wonderful time. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Thank you for being here. Thank you.
Okay. You too, Ilanis. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's all for today. And until next time, be safe, be loved, and spread love.
Listening. This has been Illusion of Difference, I as Creator, with your host, Alondis Lake. Join us again. Continue to learn how to take charge in every situation, every challenge.